Hello, lovely podcast people. It's been a long time, and it has taken an absolutely seminal, in my opinion, paper that has just been published to bring me out of retirement. But it's nice to be back talking to you. And yeah, as the title of this podcast suggests, there's a bit of a game changer, and it's not very often that this comes around. So Kevin Hall's paper that he released back in 2016 was a bit of a game changer with regards to a nail in the coffin with regards to the insulin hypothesis. And papers like this don't come around often. Sometimes you've got to keep up to date with the research. Like, the research doesn't take big U-turns or very often, if at all. But sometimes we get something that really, really answers a question, advances our understanding. And this time it's to do with protein and our protein recommendations. Now, nothing huge is going to change, but we've got a new tool in the box as a result of this new paper around our protein consumption. Just before I deep dive into this, just to let you know that I am doing another round of talks internationally. Depending on where you are, I'm coming to Sydney and Perth and Singapore on this round. I'm actually in Sydney going to do two talks. And yes, I have a new seminar, and it's an aggressive diet coaching seminar. So in March this year. And again, I'll be doing more of these in different cities as time goes on. But yes, I've put together essentially an aggressive... I'll be doing my tour talk actually as well in Sydney because I'm there for a few extra days. If you're interested, actually, I'll put links in the show notes of this because, come along, the aggressive diet coaching seminar will likely... You will get free access to the aggressive dieting calculator 3.0. And you'll be the first people to get that. And as part of your ticket, you will get the new calculator with all the up-to-date calculations, formulas, and new fancy bits to it. I'll just leave it there. So yeah, that's in March. The dates, again, I'll put them in the description, but it's something like the 22nd and 23rd of March in Sydney, maybe the 26th, 28th in Perth. Can't fully remember. Maybe it's the 27th, Wednesday, the 27th of March, and then the 30th in Singapore. So anyway, please, if you're interested in that, click the links in the bio, get in quickly. The first 10 tickets to every seminar are going to be almost half price. Then there'll be some heavily discounted early bird tickets. And then, so please, if you are, I guess, cost sensitive, but really want to come, get in early. I want to provide those opportunities for people who will literally just set a clock and just be there and get those done. I think people who are like that should be rewarded. And likewise, it's nice to provide a situation where if you are not financially flush at the minute, that you can maximize your ability to attend those talks. But the seminar, yes, will be smaller, much more intimate, help. Whether you're a sort of fitness enthusiast or someone who wants to basically go through the process of aggressive dieting yourself, it's going to have all of the information for you to be able to do that yourself or to be able to coach others to do it. So, you know, a few people have set up, you know, successful coaching programs and kind of, you know, fast fat loss coaching programs using my information, my calculators. And so if you want to do the same as a coach, that's there for you. And we'll be, you know, be talking about some of that, how to coach it. But again, learning how to coach it as an individual, you can just coach yourself through it, do it well, and hopefully be able to just take control of being able to adjust your body composition very, very well. So without further ado, the new paper, I don't know if I've got the title of it, but essentially it's, oh yes, I have. The anabolic response to protein ingestion during recovery from exercise has no upper limit in magnitude and duration in vivo in humans. And yeah, it's a really good paper. And I'll be honest, when I first saw the paper, I was like challenged. Because I've seen other people talking about it and being a little bit, what's the word, butthurt by it. You can tell they are not liking what they're reading. They're not liking the fact that it's kind of shown us some stuff that maybe mechanistically wasn't the case. So I'm just going to talk about it, what it means, why they might have found those studies. Some of you have probably read the paper and or seen the results. And to give you some more idea behind it. So very quickly, they used a couple of quotes. I don't know if I've got them here, but essentially something like, as protein intake increases, there is an upper limit on the anabolic response. And if you go past this, any excess amino acids are oxidized. Essentially, it's the idea that you can only consume, 25, 30, whatever grams of protein a sitting. Now, most evidence-based individuals, most clued up people, are well aware that you can't eat protein and it's not absorbed. You're not, eating a big steak or a couple of chicken breasts and, oh, I've got past my 25 grams of protein and all of the rest of it's going into the toilet bowl. That's not how these things work. But there is this idea that past a certain point, if you ingest excess amino acids, that the oxidation, the burning, the using those as fuel or turning them into waste products and getting rid of them goes up with that intake, anything above this sort of level. And so this paper set out to look at this, understand it better. And we've had previous papers in the past which have looked at an author, Wolf, can't remember, Robert Wolf. He's done some stuff kind of sponsored by the Beef Foundation, Association, whatever it is, using beef patties and, 70 grams of protein in one sitting. So that's a whole lot of beef in one sitting. And showed that the anabolic response was quite great with that amount. But they looked at whole body protein synthesis, which we're not really that fussed on if we're wanting to build muscle or those kind of things, improve muscle recovery. But in this paper, they have used 100 grams of protein in one sitting. The type of protein they used was milk protein concentrate, which I was somewhat impressed that they'd used that rather than casein, actually a milk protein concentrate, which does have a bit of whey. It's about 80% casein, 20% whey. And it's a little bit more like real food than if they had used purely casein. It's maybe still, it's very much a bit like using Greek yogurt, but maybe it's a bit different from using egg if you had used beef or chicken or these sorts of things. But it's an interesting point. The reason I'm telling you that is some of their findings might be due to the type of protein they've used. So they've used 100 grams of that versus 100 grams of protein from that versus 20 grams of protein. And obviously, previously, there's been this idea that you need to consume protein up to an amount, let's say 25 grams, for instance, although that's probably too low, which is maybe one of the limitations of this study, and that you needed to consume that regularly throughout the day for basically hitting what's called leucine threshold, stimulating muscle protein synthesis, and then you get this recovery and muscle gain being stimulated. However, in this study protocol, they got people to do whole body resistance training, which again is important, versus single muscle group resistance training, because again, we have some evidence that that might change the outcome. And then they consumed either 25 or 100 grams of this milk protein concentrate, and then they took muscle biopsies and blood was measured every 4 hours for 12 hours. And this is where things are super interesting, because this is one single feeding of 100 grams of protein. And then they measured things like, well, they measured so many great things. And what was fantastic about this study is that they essentially took a cow and they got that cow to produce the milk protein concentrate, and it was radioactive isotoped, labeled with a radioactive isotope, that they were then able to measure the incorporation of these proteins into specific tissues. And they were able to measure the changes in other hormones through the blood testing. You know, very well designed, good study that can show us some really interesting things that, you know, has ended up showing me stuff that I was like, no flipping way. And I'm trying to think of my ordering here, but I've just gone straight to this thing of like I'm slightly baffled by muscle protein synthesis. When we feed with amino acids, essentially amino acids, you know, complete proteins that contain leucine and the essential amino acids, we see muscle protein synthesis spike up, and then quickly within a relatively short time, few hours, come back down. And this is where we got this kind of terminology like muscle full effect and the refractory period where we stimulate it and then it comes back down. And I used to make this joke, and I'm going to have to work out if I can still make this joke, because I always used to talk about, you know, and I would do this with my fingers, if you're just listening, like a little tickling motion, you know, stimulate it. And then it would go up, and you know, you could have it up for a while, but it has to come back down and have its refractory period before you can give it a little bit more stimulation and you can get it up again. And obviously there I'm talking about muscle protein synthesis, not the thing that you're now thinking about. I don't know if I can make this little innuendo anymore, because in this study that they showed that muscle protein synthesis did spike up, it did come back down, not all the way back down in the same way that the 25 grams of protein did, but it was significantly lower. However, we then look to the other graphs, and I don't know if on the video of this, I might edit them and have them around my head or something, but we can see that on the 100 grams of protein, despite what we've seen on the curves of the muscle protein synthesis, we can see the incorporation of protein into muscle 4 hours, 8 hours, and 12 hours going up and up and up. So the cumulative effect was just building all of those time periods, those new measurements, which is what I was like, no way. I would have been sure that it would, and it's seemingly maybe the gradients on the graphs that we see within the results of this study, it does show that the gradient is seemingly a little bit lower between 4 and 8 and 8 and 12 than it was at 0 and 4. And a very important part of this study to note is that 25 grams of protein, remember milk protein concentrate, did not have the same gradient of incorporation of protein into muscle as 100 grams in the first 4 hours, which, if it was maximally stimulating muscle protein synthesis, it should have really. So I think we've got a limitation here on the study. And there was a good study done, and it's a cool paper. I still remembered it got published, I think, soon after we started MNU and had written the muscle gain lecture, and then this paper came out and I was like, oh, for goodness sakes, we're gonna have to update the lecture. But they call, you know, it's kind of on the fitness industry or on Instagram, social media, called the one scoop versus two scoop study, and it was like 20 grams of protein versus 40 grams of protein. And in these studies they use whey protein, and this is a key difference in perhaps what we are finding in this more recent study versus previous ones, because the amino acid kinetics, you know, the hyperaminoacidemia profile that we're seeing with casein versus whey, very, very different. So we're well aware, I say casein, milk protein concentrate, the release and the you know, digestion and release of this these amino acids is much slower with MPC versus, you know, whey protein. So for a start, if it was whey protein, we might, with 25 grams, we'd probably definitely would see a difference in the amino acid kinetics, and therefore, but the muscle protein synthesis response might have been different. And so we are left with a few questions. So in this the 2016 study, the McNaughton study, one scoop versus two scoop, essentially they showed with whole body resistance training rather than single limb, a single muscle training, that 40 grams of protein was better than 20. So it's a really interesting, and in that study they tried to correlate some of these things with lean body mass and stuff like that, and they didn't manage to find any significance. But we see in that study that 40 grams was better. So we still are sadly left with a situation where we don't know. It would have been nice maybe if the 25 grams was more like 35 or 40 based on what the data that we did have on that. It still would have been, you know, going from 40 grams to 100 grams, a 250%, you know, protein intake in the higher group. And it would have been nice to see if we got the same initial gradient in the protein accrual. So we're left wondering a little bit. Likewise, we've got to remember that it was milk protein concentrate, which might be slightly different from consuming other sources of protein. And one more thing I will just say at this point is these were untrained individuals in the study. So we do have a bit of a weird situation whereby untrained individuals, even not untrained, but have been in a, you know, period of injury, coming back off season into season. We see this with all athletes, like the amount of protein required to not be in a negative nitrogen balance in people who are coming back after a layoff from training is massive. Like for the first 12 days of training, it's absolutely huge. So we do have a scenario here of like, would this maybe have been different in people who are slightly more trained? So that's another thing we need to bear in mind. Likewise, lots of people are talking about this study a bit like it's a meal frequency study. Oh, see, meal frequency doesn't matter for muscle gain. And this is not a meal frequency study per se. We've got the same meal frequency, 1 and 1. This is a absolute nail in the coffin for the idea that you can only absorb and digest and use 25 grams or essentially what they've showed is 100 grams of protein. Like people are talking about, oh, it shows a dose response. Like it doesn't really, because we don't have like multiple doses. We don't see it consistently going up. Like it certainly doesn't show a much of a decaying. Like I said, 4 to 8 and 8 to 12 hours, the differences do seem to decay a little bit. But we're seeing it over 12 hours go up and up and up and up. Now, I would love to see a study that had, say, 50 grams. Or what I would more like to see is like 120 grams of protein in one sitting. Because then we'd be getting more towards like 1.5, 1.6 grams per kilogram. Like if we took someone who's 80 kilograms and 1.5 times 80 is 120. So 120 grams of protein for subjects that weighed on, you know, around 80 kilograms. We could go that is towards, I mean, why not just go 1.6 so that we're in the, you know, the where Stu Phillips. There's a good paper. Maybe I'll put, again, any papers that I mention, I'll put them as usual, the link in the show notes. And so 1.6 being really the upper limit of where evidence-based research shows us that above there, we're not really sure if that's giving us much more in terms of muscle gain. But doing that then versus maybe 3 times 40 grams every, say, 4 hours, or maybe 2 times 60 grams. Because as I say, we do see these slight reductions maybe between the 4 and 12 hour mark, where if we're talking about optimal, then maybe more than one feeding is going to be good. But this is where if I go on to talking more about what's the recommendations now, I do feel like we need to update how we're talking about protein with clients or for ourselves as evidence-based educators. So it would be interesting to see the 2 times 60, 3 times 40, 1 times 120 grams. Again, using milk protein concentrate, probably okay, because that's what we're looking at in studies. But again, in a day and age where we're going, Okay, well, what if someone is having 40 grams of whey protein, 30, 40 grams of whey protein, 0.3 grams per kilogram of their body weight of whey protein immediately after training? Because we do see that we have this very fast spike in muscle protein synthesis and it's coming back down. And therefore, are we then able to, what would happen probably in real life is you have that shake and then you eat a meal. And that meal could be a bit bigger than maybe previously we have thought it could be. And so some people are saying, you know, total protein is absolutely the only thing that matters. What we do know now is total protein really is probably the most important thing, but we don't know that it's going to be enough to maximize, say, 24-hour muscle gain, you know, optimizing 24-hour muscle gain than what I would suggest maybe is between 2 and 4 meals per day. So if you had one, if we say 16 hours, if you had your protein at 0, 8 and 16, and then you had 8 hours of sleep, or, you know, 0, 7 and 14, and then, you know, some time before bed to brush your teeth and go to bed. We can't really say that having 4 or 5 whatever meals in the day is going to be any better whatsoever. You know, I would suggest that really, based on this research, we can quite clearly see that 2 to 3 feedings is going to be enough as long as total protein is managed. Now, again, what's the most important thing for the client? Adherence. What suits them? What suits their lifestyle? But maybe we can be a bit more flexible with the, you know, flexible with optimization. Sometimes optimization is this thing that, like, you can't be too flexible with this because you need to do this. Actually, it's given us another degree of flexibility to optimize muscle gain. What I will say is we do also know that little and often protein probably is worse. And so we have the studies on this where I think it's West's lab, West et al. Maybe. Not sure if that's right. I think it probably is. But they did, you know, pulse dosing of protein, small amounts versus one bolus dose. And the bolus dose, again, we've seen this in elderly populations where we need the higher dose of protein because of anabolic resistance. But this is why, for me, the 25 grams of protein used in this study was just inadequate to really give us the end answer. And that's not a criticism of the researchers per se, but they, you know, they've used some rationale for using 25 grams of protein, but I think it was probably not an adequate rationale. But again, I get the things with regards to funding and why you do things and proof of concept. But I think we would have learned more if it had been 40 grams versus 100. But I still think we would have got, and what I'm saying is, I think if you did that, we would still get this amazing answer that you can literally consume 100 grams of protein. And you will continue to accrue muscle protein over a 12-hour period with this large bolus. And for me, what it's done is, like, if you're going to sleep 8 hours, maybe we do need to start considering, based on the kind of data that we've seen in this study, much larger doses of protein. Like, if you're fasting, not eating whilst you sleep for 9 hours, could we be doing much higher than the typically recommended, maybe 0.5, 0.4, 0.5, 0.6 grams per kilogram to absolutely maximize protein accrual whilst we sleep pre-bed? So, you know, having those first dose, second dose, and then the third dose being absolutely massive, being literally maybe half of your total protein requirements. It's very interesting. So, yeah, just to finish off, really, just talking about, I mean, I think I've kind of said it all when I talked about what our advice should be now, our guidelines should be. It's, that's that final bit of, well, if we're hitting maybe 0.4, 0.5 grams per kilogram twice a day, and then the final one, 0.6, maybe a bit higher right before bed, anything more than that, it's difficult. Now, we still cannot be 100% sure because we do not have a good frequency study. So meal, changing meal frequency, and again, making it rather than just looking at a single day, looking at a whole training cycle. But the problem is then we're looking at muscle protein incorporation, incorporation of protein into muscle. But then we then have to start measuring, you know, overall muscle gain, which becomes very difficult. And again, using radioactive isotopes in the long term is going to be very, very difficult and very, very expensive. So, yes, I hope you know, I've kept that fairly short, I think, maybe. But, yeah, it's really interesting to have such amazing data, well-conducted study, and then realizing, sheesh, I never would have expected to see that, and being sort of feeling very challenged by that. But again, remaining evidence-based, you know, we need to take a step back and go, do you know what? I'm updating my knowledge based on what's there. You know, and it stings when you've got morons who have been saying stuff before based on, oh yeah, that's how we evolved. You can just, you know, look at how lions eat. You know, they'll just gorge and then they don't eat meat for a while. It's like, mate, we're not a lion. But being truly evidence-based, we have to be basing on something rather than just a guess. Because 99% of the time, let's be honest, these morons guess and they're wrong. But how can I hold my hands up and say, yeah? I mean, I've always been a proponent of this idea of, you know, with my background interest in intermittent fasting, very much we've always said for muscle retention, one meal a day is enough. And I've had one client, you know, who went to the Olympics who did this, and I thought he was absolutely insane. And, but yes. With regards to muscle retention, we could always say it. But now with regards to muscle gain, we've almost got an insight into, wow, as long as each feeding hits leucine threshold, probably, and as long as we hit sort of finding what this figure is, if it is 1.6, like if we ate 1.6 grams per kilogram in one single sitting, would that be enough? You know, would there be any drop off towards 24 hours if you could just do that once? Very, very interesting. So I'll leave it there. Like I said, if you're in Sydney or Perth, Singapore or surrounding areas in March, look at the links in the bio. Drop your email in and I'll send you all of the details. Tickets will be going on sale. Man, I should have said this at the beginning. Tickets will be going on sale this Saturday, 27th of Jan. Depending on when you listen to this podcast, you know, if tickets are on to like the most expensive round and you are really struggling, drop me a DM, see what I can do. But yes, nice to be back. Nice to talk to some of you. I will also look to be doing the aggressive diet coaching seminar in America, try and put one on in the UK. And yes, next year, who knows? Anyway, much love. I'll try and get back on the podcast soon. And I hope you've enjoyed having me inside your ears. And I will speak to you soon. Much love.